This is Arrivals. Stories of migration, transformation, and change. The program that explores what we do when what we've done is a thing of the past. During the 1970s, hundreds of thousands of Russian nationals migrated from the country. Many left in protest to the policies of the Soviet regime, the anti-Semitism, the curbing of civil liberties, the jailing of political dissidents. And while it was possible to exit the country, it was for a long time impossible to return. Refugees from this era in Russian history are sometimes referred to as refuseniks, a nod to their refusal to live under the authoritarian conditions of the time. Today, Valentine's Day, this episode is coming to you a little bit early. It's the story of one such refugee and the love she left behind, but never forgot.
Gotta have a Russian name, right? So call me Olga.
I was born in Moscow in 1961. I played piano, started when I was six, so yeah, that's what I do. My early memories are pretty much grim. Most of the memories from Moscow are pretty grim. Not a great place to, at least it wasn't for me. For some people, I'm sure it was a wonderful place to grow up, but I always felt constrained. One, it was a very anti-Semitic place to grow up. Two, there was no access to things. There were no information, no, it was not so interesting. Maybe that's why I started music. Everybody's stories from that time have to have an impact, you know, have been impacted by the culture and by the political climate, so no way to escape that.
Looking at Russia, we might see it as a country to be studied, as we study other nations of the world. Yet we know that Russia today is regarded as a grave threat to our nation, to our freedom, to the peace of the world.
I wanted to leave as soon as I was conscious, I think. So, as soon as my cognitive abilities reached a certain point, which was probably in grade three, I wanted to leave. At 18, which was the legal age in which I could have applied, we did. So my mother and I left, but we were in what you call refuseniks, which is we were not allowed to leave, and we had all kinds of problems leaving and staying, and my mother was fired from her job. I was kicked out of my of the conservatory. We were politically active for them to get me, you know, us out. Like in the 70s, refuseniks were very in a common sort of political jargon for all the people who the Soviets did not let out, and they were trying to get them out from here. So it was a very chaotic experience, let's say. As soon as we could, we had applied. We got an invitation. There is a whole process of trying to emigrate and as political sort of refugees is what we were. And then it lasted for 3 years because they wouldn't let us, and we were so sort of in limbo till I was about 20. And when we got here, I turned 20 here. How should I call him? Let's make a name. Well, I don't want some kind of stupid name. So let's do, let's say Joseph. It's a good, strong name. Not really a Russian name, but, you know, could be, right? Joseph. Okay, Joseph, let's say that. I was 12 and he was a friend of my uncle's, my mother's brother. And they were in the same school together, and they were in the same class together. And then they went to university, and they were taught by my mother, who was teaching at the university at the time, before she lost her job. And so he was in this kind of place, you know, when I saw him and I met him, and I saw him and his girlfriends at the time, and he was a handsome, you know, 20-year-old, so yeah, I kind of had a little girl crush on him. And I doubt that he saw me at all. Only because he knew who I was, but that's about it. But then, maybe several years later, I went to a different city to visit some people. And he went to the same city with his friends. And my mother, who didn't think it was a terrible idea, but I think it was probably not a very good idea, but she thought that he would be a perfect chaperone for me because she didn't want me to travel by myself. So he was chaperoning and, you know, I was at the age where I already kind of almost 16, you know, so. Then he noticed me. When I turned 18 and we started trying to leave, then he and I got together. Maybe it was like a New Year's party, I think that was, and in Russia, New Year's is a big, very big thing, and we get together as many people as possible and everybody sort of parties day and night, and another day and another night, and so forth. And so I think it was one of those New Year's parties, and maybe it was at our place, and there were, I don't know, many, many people. And maybe that was the time, yeah, the day. And so he was my first boyfriend. He was my first love, so to speak. We were girlfriend and boyfriend sort of for the 3 years. And then he was not able to leave because his father, you had to have your parents' permission in order, however old you were, you could have been 60. If your parent was alive, the parent had to sign a permission to leave. And so his father would not let him leave. And so I had to leave by myself. We already were done with the process. I mean, we were leaving. So we left. Because his father wouldn't let him leave because his father was, I don't want to say bad, well, he was a communist. He thought that it was a betrayal of the wonderful Communist Party and the Soviet Union in all its glory. So he wouldn't. So I think his relationship with his father suffered a lot after that. You could have been 60, and if your father or mother were alive, they had to sign it. It had nothing to do with your age. The stupidity of bureaucracy has no bounds. The thing about the leaving at that time, leaving was forever. At that moment, there was no perestroika in the future, so nobody knew. Once you left, that was it. So just like my father thought that he'd never see me again, so did everybody else. I mean, this was it. This was migration. And so when we left, we were just upset and and everything, but we had to build our lives. And so he got married there, and I got married here. Mine didn't last much, so maybe 5 years, something like that. He's lasted about 20, so. It was not a pleasant experience, though. But very little of the experience in Russia was pleasant anyway, so it doesn't... I think it was much worse for him than for me, because it's always worse for the person who stays. The person who leaves has something to look forward to. And his wife at the time and his son eventually also immigrated in 91, after the perestroika, and it was possible. So 10 years after, we did. We stayed in touch, we said, credit cards and happy birthdays and happy new year and occasional calls. And then he stayed in touch with my mother, too. There was no sort of thought about it. I had a little thought about it behind somewhere, but I never actually, I think, verbalized it. Or anything like that. So, and then at some point, his son went off to school, and he decided to get divorced because he didn't want to. It wasn't really because of me. It was just because he wanted to. He was done. It was over. So, and he was not living in New York at the time. He was living in a different city. And so he got divorced, and when he got divorced, he sort of came to visit, just to say hi or something, just to visit. He told my mother before he told me that he got divorced. Well, I thought, wow, this is interesting. Who knows, maybe now. Because by that point, I was single for over 10 years. Maybe even more. And I was with this one or that one and this one or this one, and it was all horrible. And then I went on some J-date, and that was awful. Then I went on some other, that was just really bad. And nothing worked, nothing, there was nothing. So by the time he called me and said, I'm getting divorced, I was like, okay, maybe this might work. But I didn't really hold out any hope, because by that time I thought, well, forget it. So he came to visit, and then he sort of never left, really. I mean, he left and we commuted for a long time, for about 6 years. But not left in terms of being with me, that was it. It was just like a picking up from before. Never, there were no 20 years. And we were both, for a while we were both why did we have the 20 years? It was we lost, but we didn't lose. I mean, who knows? We were different, a little bit different people. Before, he was very Russian male, and I was very trying, I guess I was too headstrong, maybe, is the word. This felt all of a sudden like home, And not necessarily because we were from the same place or anything, even though I think that helps. Right now, it's ridiculous because we don't have to... If we meet somebody we have to talk to them together, because otherwise we'll just double up. If he talks to somebody and I come, I'll ask exactly the same questions. So, or we don't have sometimes to even say anything because things are... Basically, it feels like, you know how those couples who live together for 60 years or something and they finish each other's sentences? I think that's how we are now, even though we didn't have the 60 years. I ask myself, could I possibly live without him? And there is no way. Whereas if, you know, when I was 20, I had no idea. Yeah, sure, there was a whole thing in front. Don't make me too maudlin. I'm gonna get like... because it's true. There are, you know how people say there is one and only? When he came that time, that was very clear. It's clear. I hope that people get that kind of clarity when they meet somebody, because it's striking. And I think actually if there wasn't the interlude, I don't know if we would stay together, because there was no bell when I was, you know, 18. Right? I had no idea that this was. Maybe it was for him, but for me it wasn't. It may have taken these 20 years to actually realize that this is where I want to be. You know how people, when they just get together and you have ups and downs and you have things that could sabotage your relationship, and then maybe somebody says something and behaves in some way, and of course, it's all happened, except that from the very beginning, it was clear that all of these things were not withstanding the fact that I know how he feels about me. I just hope that people find somebody that is so clearly their destiny. Because that is amazingly important in life. I feel, in that respect, I feel the luckiest person ever.
Special thanks to Olga for sharing her story. We'll be back in 10 days with another episode of Arrivals, from some voices you may have heard here before on the show. This episode of Arrivals was written, edited, and produced below the hazy cloud of a sunshine day in the lovely Montecito Heights neighborhood of Los Angeles, California, by me, Jonathan Hirsch. Our associate producer is Nora Lind, and our episode art comes to you from Steph Tan. If you like what you've heard today on the show, please leave us a review on iTunes and tell a friend. If you have a story of migration, transformation, or change that you'd like to share with us, drop us a line at arrivalsshow@gmail.com. However you spell it, I'll get it. We produce an occasional microcast called En Route, which you can find there as well. Visit us at arrvls.com. This program is a proud and founding member of The Herd, a storytelling audio collective featuring 6 independent producers from across North America who have banded together to promote and support one another's work. To find out more about The Herd, visit our website, theherdradio.com. That's theherdradio.com. I'm Jonathan Hirsch. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again, may you wind up where you need to be.